Okay, let's give a warm Tulare County welcome to our warm-up speaker, Bill.
All right.
Wow, the room filled up a little bit. Hi.
Hi.
I'm Bill, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Bill.
And I'm grateful for another day of sobriety, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to come down here from Oakhurst or Coarse Gold, where I'm living now, and had no idea that I was going to be standing in front of you and sharing a little bit. But that's the beautiful part about the program. If I had, I'd have probably prepared some damn thing, you know, and now I can just talk from here, and it's where I should be talking from in the first place. So God bless you for being here. And had a beautiful dinner with Rick and his wife and Tom and his wife. You know, we meet people in this program, like your speaker tonight, that we can become friends with instantly, but that's not the best part. The best part is they can last forever. They're not those intermittent ones that we have in the bars and the acquaintances and stuff like that. I found out what true friendships really are by becoming a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have a couple of newcomers in the house tonight, and that's probably the most important thing I can do, is share a little bit about why I stuck around in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was told to go to Alcoholics Anonymous to keep my job in 1960. I was barely 23 years old, and I needed a job. I had 13 W-2s that year, and so this guy was the last guy on earth to hire me, and it was my dad. And so I went to this meeting, and a bunch of guys were sitting around, and it was somebody's house. It was a beautiful home in Corona del Mar, California, and they swapped stories about drinking and not drinking and that kind of stuff. And they says, well, just don't drink until the next meeting. And I said, when's that? They says, that's next week. I says, oh, I can do that. And they stood up and they held hands, which was kind of funky, and said a prayer, which is, oh, well, what the hell, you know, not everything's perfect. So I went home and I didn't drink. And the next 17 years, I drank about three or four times, but stayed dry going to meetings. And I never drank while going to meetings. I held AA as very, very saint. I knew that this was where I would save my life. So don't mess with AA. And I never did. When I wanted to drink, because I was dry, I wasn't sober. And the reason I was dry, because I didn't read the book, I didn't get a sponsor, I didn't do the steps, I was not drinking and going to meetings. Dry. Crispy. but not sober. And so when things got tough, I would get away from AA, and when nobody was around me, I'd go have some drinks and get rid of that pain that I'd built up in my life for being dishonest, you know, and for being a not a good person. And I knew I wasn't a good person, and the only way I knew how to solve that pain was to have a drink or get drunk. And then I wouldn't last very long, 3 or 4 months, and I'd head back to the meetings again. And that went on for 17 years. And as they say, this program is progressive. And so even though I wasn't out there drinking all the time, the disease was progressive in me. And every time I did go out, it got worse and worse and worse. Until the last time I went out, it was horrible, terrible drunk. I was so fortunate. I'd been to so many meetings and heard so many stories about guys who killed other people while they were drunk by driving, and who had done horrible things. And I hadn't done any of that yet. And I knew it was time in 1977 in January. I actually was 76 at New Year's. And I had four doors in my life that I was going to go through. Either incarcerated in prison for the rest of my life. That was one door that was open for me. The second one was going into a penal institution. Insane Asylum or AA was the fourth door. I chose AA, thank God. Because, guess what? The people in those rooms welcomed me back. They didn't chastise me for going out or going away. They always welcomed me back. And that's the kind of love that you have in here for one for another that you don't find. I never found anyplace else. And I tried everything in the world. I checked myself into an insane asylum. Outpatient, of course. And I tried everything. I tried the churches, you know. I'd sit there very diligently to a men's breakfast meeting, a Christian men's breakfast meeting. And I love you guys who are Christians. I love you, and I am too. But in those days, and I'd sit there listening to the guy get up and say, well, I had a cigarette last week, and the Lord, I know the Lord's going to chastise me, and I'm going to go to hell. And I'm thinking, you had a cigarette, and you're going to hell? What's below hell? Because that's where I'm going. I mean, for that's all you did. I couldn't identify with them what I was trying to say. I didn't. And here, the stories I heard from you guys, yeah, that's me. I'm I did that, yeah. So anyway, I belong. And the most important thing I can say to the newcomer is that this isn't the end of a life. It's the beginning of the greatest life you've ever wanted for yourself. Whatever potential you have, it's in here that you can reach it. You know, whatever goals that you want, it's in here. Doing these steps, getting a sponsor, reading the book, going to meetings, getting into the fellowship, going to conferences, that's where you find yourself, the person who is in there, who is a good person, who you can get up in the morning and look in the mirror and have self-worth and dignity. I never had any of that when I was out there in the bars and wheeling and dealing. But I got it in here. Oh, yeah, there's times that I fall back. Hell yes, I'm a human. But on the most part, I have a chance at being the best person I've ever been. And that's what John says. He says that almost every meeting. So I steal it from you, John. Today I'm the best person I've ever been. And that's John's line. And I hope he says it again tonight, because we all need to hear that. Because of this program. Because of what we can do in here. And it isn't just going to meetings, my friends. Meetings is good. Fellowship is good. But the work is in the steps and in the sponsorship and in the book. And you got to do those things to get what the others say is the greatest life that there is. And let me close and let you speak to the real speaker. Listen to the real speaker, Johnny. Let me close by saying that we all have gifts on the other side that we're walking this way on earth. And we can't see those gifts because they're on the other side. But they're there for you. And there's only one way you're going to get those gifts. And that's to stay on the path of Alcoholics Anonymous, where the people have gone before us. And they've picked up the rocks and the stones. And they've made it easy for us to walk down this path and get the gifts that God has waiting for you. Thanks for asking me.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's give a warm Tulare County welcome for our featured speaker, John.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic named John.
Hi, John.
Welcome, everybody. I want to thank Rick for his hospitality and for asking me to come here and share. I'm really not a speaker, I'm a talker. I like to talk, just ask my wife. She's not here tonight, so I can talk about her a lot. I want to thank Bill for the introduction. And I normally start off with a joke. The problem is I only know two jokes, and I can't say the jokes in the mixed crowd, and especially from the podium. So I got the bright idea to ask Rick. for a joke. Well, now I have three jokes that I can't tell from the podium or in a mixed crowd. So, thank you very much, Rick. I'm grateful to God and Alcoholics Anonymous for my sobriety. I have a sobriety date of April 17, 1977. I have a sponsor, Bill. I have a home group, which is the Monday Night Men's Stag up in Oakhurst, California. I think those things are a requirement to stay sober. I've been around long enough to see that revolving door that so many people talk about get slammed shut. I know we have a couple of new guys with us. I don't know what your story is or if this is your first, second, or third attempt in getting recovered. But I got to tell you, if you stick with Alcoholics Anonymous and don't drink one day at a time, you're going to have a fantastic life. I have. I'm sober a little over 41 years. Had a full head of hair when I got here. So now you get to know which I actually, I looked a little bit like Rick with the hair at one time. And now you get to know what happens after 40 years of sobriety. I married 50 years to the same woman. We got married May 11th, 1968. So she was with me for 9 years before I got sober. And she got actively involved in another organization called Al-Anon. Do we have any Al-Anons in here tonight? Nobody? Do we have any non-alcoholics with us tonight? One, two, three. Good. Well, thank you anyway. I got to tell you, there's a soft spot in my heart for people who have stuck with those of us that suffer from the disease of alcoholism. In the beginning, of course, Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson, when they got sober, their wives were there too. I don't know where I would be today if my wife had not gone to Al-Anon 3 or 4 years before I got sober and that she stuck with me for the 9 years. I treated her like a widow. I was the kind of guy that would go out after work. I'd get out of work about 5 o'clock. I'd call her on the phone and say, honey, I'll be home in a couple hours. I'm just going to have a couple of drinks with Frank. And around 4 o'clock in the morning, I'd show up. And that went on for 9 years, unless I was in jail. I was one of those drunks that couldn't walk very well, so I had to drive. Couldn't see where I was going, so I had to drive. And spend a little bit of time in jail. Ended up with 3 drunk drivings. Back then, we called them 502s. The last time, I spent 30 days in jail. And that was scary. I'm not a very big guy, and that scared the heck out of me. It didn't scare me straight, but it scared me. I was born into an Irish Catholic family. I'm the oldest of 6. My father was a normal non-alcoholic. My mother was non-alcoholic. However, my grandfather was an alcoholic. We just recently visited with my uncle, who just turned 95, and he likes to reminisce and tell me all these stories about my dad and his father and how I was when I was a little guy. And the bottom line was, when I was born, I guess I was restless, irritable, and discontented from the beginning. And I wasn't very nice around him when I was a little boy. He had a big old huge house in Long Beach, California. And at the top of the stairway was a laundry chute. And I loved jumping in that laundry chute and going like this and getting to the bottom and getting out and going back up and doing it again and again and again. And he was always angry with me. So he said to me now, this last, we were there 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, are you still going to do that? And I go, well, I fit. And he goes, you haven't changed at all, have you? No. And I'm 72 years old, so no, I wish I could get back in that shoe. What a great time that was. I was able to escape. I was sickly as a boy. I had polio at 10. I was in those steel things and braces. Had a tough time, couldn't walk. And I was always told from the nuns, because I went to Catholic school, that the reason why things like this were happening to me was because I must be a bad boy. And that stuck with me until I got sober. So everything I did, I was a bad guy. I was a bad boy. If I thought a bad thought, I was going to go to hell. If I didn't think at all, I was going to go to hell. So I struggled. The only thing that would kind of take that away at times was drinking. I'm the kind of alcoholic. I loved the taste of alcohol. I don't know if anybody else can identify with that. I loved it. I'm like that guy in chapter 3. I tried a lot of different things, but they never worked. I stopped hundreds of times, but I couldn't stop from starting. I'd stop for a week, and then I'd say, okay, fine, I'm not an alcoholic, I don't have a problem. Because my wife used to tell me, John, you're drinking way too much. Things are going to happen. You're not going to come home some night. You're going to kill somebody, you're going to end up in jail. Or eventually what's going to happen is you're going to be a wet brain, and you're going to end up in some insane asylum someplace, some sanitarium. Or you're going to go to die. And the fourth place, of course, is Recovery Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't believe her. But anyway, so I kept on doing my thing. That's what I just did. She used to try to kill me. She would rearrange the furniture in the house. So I'd go home 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and as I remembered in the morning or the morning before, that maybe the table was in a certain place. And I'd come home and boom, I'd fall over the table, and she'd kind of chuckle, ha, 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 he's home. I used to get angry with her and say, Linda, why are you doing that to me? And she would play like she was asleep. And they'd go, oh, you're home. Oh, I'm so glad that you're here. And I go, yeah, I'm home. It really got worse. As a matter of fact, I'm going to share this with you. I don't know if there's any vets in here. I spent a tour in Vietnam. And one night, where we lived, we had two posts on our house. And they kind of held up a little lean-to, I guess you want to say, or a porch. And I came home one morning, it was kind of early, it was about 4, and I got out of my car, and I started to walk to the house, and I hit this string right here. So I go, boom, ooh, and I fell back. She also was going to do my feet, but she didn't do my feet. So from then on, for about 4 or 5 months, when I would come home, I would do one of these things. Because I wasn't sure what she was going to do, if she was going to keep the string, or maybe she was going to put some wire up there. And so she said, I'm going to get you. And eventually she did. I don't like talking too much about my drunk log, but I do think it's important as that identification thing. I drank a lot. I drank hard and fast for 14 years. I didn't stop. When I wasn't drinking, all I could think of was, when can I go get a drink? What time is it? Let me get out of here. I was in the automobile industry at that time, so we used to go out after work every night. I used to drink with this guy named Frank, and Frank was a real bad drunk. We're about the same size, but I could outdrink Frank. And Frank ends up getting sober. He got sober in April of 1975. So Frank was with me the first time I got a drunk driving. And here we are, we're driving down the Ventura Freeway in Southern California. And I get pulled over by the highway patrol. And I say to the cop, the highway patrol officer, I said, thank you for pulling me over. And he said, why? And I said, I think this guy is gay. Because he keeps grabbing my leg. And as he's grabbing my leg, he's pushing it on the accelerator, and I'm going faster. And I never heard he kind of chuckled. He said, "That's a good one." He said, "Now get." He goes, "I like that. Now get out of the car." So I got out of the car, and he asked me to do the field sobriety test. And of course, I failed. And he handcuffed me and put me in jail and gave Frank the keys to my car. Now, Frank was out of it. He had no idea where we were, but they gave him the keys. Frank ended up by making it home, and I didn't. So, yeah, that was really kind of interesting. He and I, when we used to talk, we laugh about that a lot. Frank was very instrumental in getting me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to fast forward to my last drunk, only because I don't want to bore you with the drinking details. Most of us have been there. It's just maybe a little different substitute, a little different thing that we drank. I drank scotch towards the end. I like it in Chapter 5 when it talks about fine wines, because I used to drink Thunderbird. That was a fine Ripple. Tokay. I always think those are fine wines. I don't know why, but anyway, so I used to drink those too. Anyway, I had my third drunk driving. And I called my wife and I asked her to come bail me out, and she said, "No, just rot in jail." So I said, "That's not very nice. You know, why would you want to treat someone like me like that? You know, you're my wife. How could you do that to me?" Anyway, I get bailed out and I get home. It's about 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning. And I try to go to sleep. I go take a shower. Now it's somewhere around 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. And my family is up. I have two boys. And they're in the backyard for some reason this early in the morning, and they're playing wiffle ball. And I wanted to go play wiffle ball with them. But I couldn't get out of bed to go to the backyard to play wiffle ball unless I had a drink. And I knew it. I fell on my knees and I said that prayer that I had said so many times, but this time I honestly meant it. You know, "Dear God, help me. Something is wrong with me." The phone rang about a half hour later, and it was Frank. And Frank said to me, "John, I have a feeling something is wrong." And I go, "Yeah, Frank, I just had another 502. And he said, "John, if you want to get sober, why don't you go to Alcoholics Anonymous?" And I said to Frank, "You know something, Frank? You and I drank a lot together. And if I ever get as bad as you, Frank, because you are bad, I will probably try this Alcoholics Anonymous thing." Now, we got to remember, my wife is actively involved in Al-Anon, and she's praying, and half of the area that I lived in and all the church people and all the people in Al-Anon were praying for me to get sober. So I really was struck sober. I haven't had a drink since that day, and that was April 17th, 1977. I called information to get the phone number to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the lady gave me the phone number. I called it. The lady on the other end answered the phone and says, "Hi, this is the hole in the sky." And I hung up. See, I lived near Van Nuys Airport at that time. And I thought, well, probably what I have done is I've gotten to the tower at Van Nuys Airport. That's why she said hole in the sky. And so I got to do this again. So I called information. They gave me the same number. I called it again. And she said the same thing, and I hung up. I said, "This isn't working very good." So I looked in the phone book, and it was the same phone number. I called it again, and she answered the phone. She said, "Oh, it's you again." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Do you have Alcoholics Anonymous there?" And she said, "Yes." She said, "Are you an alcoholic?" I said, "No." She goes, "Well, where do you live?" And I said, "I live in a nice neighborhood." And she said, "Well, we will send somebody out there to pick you up." I said, "I'm not going to tell you where I live. I don't want alcoholics in my house." "Well, what is this? Well, I know what you all look like. You weren't clean. You had a top coat and had a paper bag. And I'd seen you down on Skid Row. So, no, I don't want you at my house. Just give me your address and I'll show up." So she gives me the address, and a couple of days later I went to my first meeting. Back then, they gave Carol syrup. So when I walked in to this place called The Hole in the Sky, which is in Canoga Park, California, the lady behind the counter, her name was Coral, and Coral gave me a teaspoon of Carol syrup and said, grab a seat, we'll bring you a cup of coffee, and stay away from the women. And I go, oh, okay. Not that I had any aspirations to do that, but that was just something she told everybody. Yeah, I even listened to her telling some new gal that came in. She said, stay away from the men and the women. And I, so anyway, I'm at the first meeting, and they said, any newcomers? I didn't identify myself as a new person because, you see, I'm not an alcoholic. Do we have any new members, new alcoholics with us? Not me. I'm 31 years old. You can't be an alcoholic at 31. You got to be 70. So the man chaired the meeting. His name was Herb. Herb had 19 days of sobriety. And I listened to what he had to say. And the only thing that came through was, if you have a court card, I'll sign it for you. After the meeting, I went up to him and I said, I have this 502 thing. And he said, I'll sign it, kid. And if you come back tomorrow, I'll sign it again. And on the podium, it said, we care. And outside the door, it said, keep coming back. By this time in my life, nobody cared about John, because John didn't care about himself. Nobody asked me to come back. People at that time used to say, John, please stay away. Don't come back. Towards the end, when I'd go into my local bar, the bartender would say, John, we're out of your liquor. We can't have a drink tonight. I'm so sorry, but we can't serve you. You're 86th. And I thought that was a good thing. I go, oh, well, what does that mean? You know, 86. Yeah, you can't come in here anymore. So I'd go down the street and get what I wanted to drink anyway. I used to drink a thing called Rusty Nails, which is scotch and drambuie. Loved them. Loved them. I used to dream that I had a swimming pool, and the swimming pool was full of scotch, and I had a hot tub next to the pool, and I was full of drambuie. And I would swim around on a rubber ducky with a big old huge straw and just drink all day, all night. And when I wanted to get out of there, I could. And I thought that was a reality. I really did. So he signs my court card and he says, John, if you come back tomorrow, kid, I'll sign it again. I said, okay. Went back the next day. And once again, he was at the head leading the meeting. And I figured, what an important person I am. I must be here with the president of Alcoholics Anonymous. Here's a guy that's been up there 2 days in a row. Now he has 20 days of sobriety. And everybody clapped when everybody clapped when he said 20 days. I found out later on that Herb eventually got sober. He got sober the first time in 1946. Wow. But Herb could not put together more than 6 months. Either life got too good or life got too bad. Life was never in the middle for Herb. And Herb would go out and drink, and he'd be gone for 2 or 3 years, then he would come back. And he did that until he died. And I understand he died sober. But what a message this man had. So anyway, I gave it to him. He signed it. I walked outside, went down to my car, and cried. I had that first AA cry. You see, I get emotional when I talk about recovery. It was something. I went downstairs and I got in my car and I said, you know something, I thank God for bringing me here. And I said, you know something, maybe I can stay sober another day. Even though I want to drink, maybe I can stay sober. I heard one thing in the meeting and that was hope. Somebody was talking about hope one day. And I got a little bit of hope. I could see your smiles. I could see the twinkle in your eyes. You seemed to have a nice life. And that was something that I really wanted. So I cried. I went home and I told my wife. I said, you know something, Linda? I said, I think I've found it. And I'm going to keep going back to Alcoholics Anonymous. She kind of said something like, well, if you don't come back. Something like that. Anyway, so That started my journey. Third or fourth meeting, I'm in the room, and they said, do we have any new people? Less than 30 days. I raised my hand. And at that time, you raised your hand and you stood up. And they said, okay, who are you? And I said, well, my name is John. And if you can take a blood test, a blood sample from me, and tell me I've got the disease called alcoholism, then I will identify myself as an alcoholic. But until you do that, I'm not an alcoholic. See, that's part of how arrogant I was when I got here. I was a piece of work. I really was. I did that the second time, and this guy named Joe Gomez. Joe Gomez was huge. He had been in prison. He had his eye stuck out in a prison fight, stabbed. He lost one of his eyes. And Joe said, I'd like to talk to you. And I said, oh, okay. I figured, well, hey, you know, you probably want some of my knowledge. He probably wants to know all about this stuff here. You know, I mean, I'm sober maybe 10 days. He wants to know all about it. So he grabs me in the collar and he throws me up against the wall. And he says to me, don't you ever disrespect Alcoholics Anonymous again, especially if I'm in the room. Because I was disrespecting it. I didn't care about you people. I didn't care about me. What I cared about was getting a little court paper signed and maybe getting out of going back to jail again. Well, that didn't work. But that's what I cared about. I really didn't care too much about my wife. Even though I said I did, I didn't. But he threw me up against the wall. So what I did is I would peek into the room, the hallway, in the rooms of the meeting room, to see if Joe was in there. And if he was, I wouldn't go to the meeting. If he wasn't, then I would go to the meeting. And then when I would identify myself, I'd look around to see if he was sitting there. And if he wasn't, and I did that again. I did that about three more times. Then I got a sponsor. And the sponsor said the same thing, how arrogant I was, and that I should sit down, shut up, and listen. Take the cotton and put the cotton in my mouth, take it out of my ears. You know, that's the reason why God gave me two ears and one mouth, was to listen twice as much as I talked. And I said, okay. And he was a bruiser. He was an ex-police officer from New Jersey and from Chicago. And he was a tough guy. And that's exactly what I needed, was someone who was tough, who was much tougher than I was. And I wasn't very tough. And I followed his direction. We went through the big book. I did the steps. I got lucky a couple times and had a couple guys ask me to sponsor him. So life was coming pretty good for John. As a matter of fact, when I got 5 years of sobriety, I thought I should have been on the face of the grapevine. That they were going to come and they were going to interview me and put my face on there and say, here's the model Alcoholics Anonymous guy. Isn't this guy great? I'm still waiting. It hasn't happened and it's never going to happen. My journey in recovery has been really fantastic. I like talking about that more, like I said, than I do a drunkalog, because I've been sober a lot longer than I drank. And if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous and loving God as I understand Him, I would not be sober today. Once I became a student of our literature, reading the big book, taking the steps, my life turned. After a while. See, I used to come around in the beginning, in the first year of sobriety, and you'd ask me, how you doing, John? Oh, I'm doing great. Yeah, I'm working 1, 2, and 3. And you'd look at me like, yeah, sure you are. And I go, oh, yeah, like the ABCs. You know, because I heard the language, and I knew what you were talking about. But down deep inside, I wasn't doing anything. I was fearful. I want to tell you that I wanted to drink the first 18 months. Every single day. I really was not an alcoholic. I was maybe just a victim of circumstances. I might have drank just a little bit too much, but I wanted to drink. I wanted to drink. For the first 18 months, my sponsor kept telling me, just pray for the obsession to leave. And if you do the things that you're supposed to do, John, it'll eventually go away. Like I said, I was in the car business and in the automobile industry. I had a stamp. I was the manager. And I had a stamp, and the stamp said approved. Well, I'd go to meetings and I'd say, oh, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. I'd admit it. You'd ask me about it, and I go, yeah, I accept the fact I'm an alcoholic. And I can't drink safely. My history tells me that. But I have not yet approved of it. You know, that's how egotistical I was. One afternoon, I'm sitting in my office, and the guy brings me a deal. And I'm looking at the deal, and I take my approved stamp, and I hit the application and say, approved. And I said, wow. And I stopped for a moment and paused. And at that time, I had approved of the fact that I was an alcoholic. And my life turned just like that. I got on the phone and called my sponsor. I said, you won't believe what happened. He said, what? I told him. He said, thank God. So I did. At 4 months of sobriety in August of 1977, I had an alcoholic seizure. I was so saturated with alcohol that my body shut down on me. I wanted to drink, And I ended up in the hospital for a week. When I went into the hospital, my wife gave me my big book, but I said, I don't want the cover on it, so put it in a bag. You know, you make the little bags. So she made a bag for me, and I took it into the hospital. And the nurse that was helping me was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she said, oh, I saw you brought your big book. And I remember saying to her, how do you know that? And she said, well, I'm a member of the program also. So for the next week, we talked about Alcoholics Anonymous. Those things like that helped me to stay sober because I drew on that as I went through some circumstances in recovery. The loss of parents. I have a sister who died as a result of alcoholism. My dad died at 66 in 1986 from a massive heart attack. And that was difficult to deal with. But I came to you guys and I talked about it. And you helped me through it. You gave me the courage, the understanding, and the knowledge as it talks about in our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I stayed sober. My mom passed away, and I stayed sober. I was very close with my mother, and I stayed sober. My sister, I tried to get her sober for years. But I have found that working with family members on the issue of getting sober is very, very bad. They don't listen. However, what it did for me was it strengthened my conviction on recovery through Alcoholics Anonymous. Every time I talk about Alcoholics Anonymous, I get a little bit stronger because my thinker says, wow, John, you're still sober. Another day of sobriety. I came down here tonight with my sponsor, Bill. At 41 years of sobriety, I don't know if I really need a sponsor like I did when I was 41 days, but I still need somebody that I can kick things off of. You know, what do you think about this? And should I do this? And what about this? And what about that? And so we talk about it. And he's got he's a couple years older than I am, so I respect his age. And I just hope someday I get to be as old as him and as healthy as he is. And with the wisdom that he has, and so I appreciate that. I want to get back to my wife. She no longer goes to Al-Anon, but she's still involved in the deal, meaning that she's still supportive of her husband, John. She's a woman of courage, woman of commitment, and most of all, a woman of love. And I think every one of us that have somebody in our life that is non-alcoholic, they have those same assets. They must to be with us. She knows the history of Alcoholics Anonymous because that's my passion. They call me up in the mountains, History John. I love the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've done several things on it, several talks and programs and shows and whatever. Yeah, it's really kind of cool. I love it. And when I always go back to the beginning, like I mentioned, Dr. Bob and Bill, their wives were there also. And they didn't leave them. You know, they hung in there. And they weren't very nice guys, but the wives were there. In the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous up in Oakhurst, California, there was one guy whose wife would take him to the meeting and wait outside for him to make sure he went to the meeting and he came out of the meeting the same door. And that's what non-alcoholic people, husbands and wives, that stick with their spouses. I firmly recommend to anybody who sponsors anybody, especially if they're married, to visit with the wife, visit with the family. Sit down with them and let them know what they can look forward to if their husband or wife stays sober for any length of time. I've been blessed. I've been able to do that several times. A lot of the guys have stayed sober, but more importantly, so have I. I've stayed sober right along. And it's really kind of interesting how the wives, because I deal with the husbands and then I hope the wife is there, and how the wife enjoys it. You know, because they see somebody who's sober for a while. And hopefully, I've been a good example. And hopefully, if you do the same thing, you're a good example also. Because that's what we are. You know, we may be the only big book somebody ever reads. So we got to carry that garment of Alcoholics Anonymous and wear it kind of snug but kind of loose. I don't want to choke myself with it, but then I don't want it to fall off my back either. I love this program. I love everything about it. There's nothing I dislike about Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, you gave me the hope that life was going to be okay. When I break the word hope down, it means hold on, peace exists. And it does. Today I'm a pretty peaceful guy. I'm not like I used to be. Back there in those bars, I used to carry a gun and a straight razor. And that's how I answered all my questions. Luckily, I didn't go to prison forever, but I didn't care. I was so wrapped up in the disease of alcoholism. I hear a lot of times where alcoholics, oh, it was so good. Well, you know, the first couple of drinks, it might have been good. And then the next two or three drinks, it kind of got bad. And then after that, it just got really ugly. And that's how I was. I drove my car one time through a bar because there was a guy in there who upset me. And I went right through the bar, shattered the bar, got out of my car and walked away. Of course, I went to jail for that. I didn't think the cops would find me. That's how smart I was. I used to get the tabs in the bar, and I'd rip them up. And I figured, they'll never charge me. You know, that was after I signed them and turned them back in, and they brought me my copy. That's how smart I was. Right? I tell you, like I mentioned earlier, I was a real piece of work. I had that hope. Like I said, I saw the smile on your guys' face, the glimmer in your eye. And you all seemed to be doing something the same, and that was you were working a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, those 12 steps. And you worked them all in order. You worked them 1 through 12. And I've done that. You had a big book, and you had big book meetings, and you have a sponsor, and the sponsor took you through the big book. That's what happened to me. My sponsor took me through the big book several times. I underlined stuff. I have questions. And we talked about it. The greatest thing about the beginning of the big book, of course, is the allergies. I got really attracted when I found out that I was allergic to alcohol. So I went on a mission. In every restaurant I would go to, I would ask the waiter or the waitress, "Are you allergic to anything?" And you'd be surprised how many are. "What are you allergic to?" "Oh, mister, I'm allergic to milk." "But when was the last time you had a glass of milk?" "I don't know, 10, 15 years ago." "Oh, okay." I asked somebody else, "What about you?" "Oh, I'm allergic to strawberries." "Well, what happened to you?" "Oh, I get all these welts." "And when was the last time you had strawberries?" Are you crazy, sir? Why would you want to ask me that? But I was trying to figure out, if these people are allergic to strawberries and all that other stuff, and I'm allergic to alcohol, but I still want to drink, something is wrong with me up here. And that's true. That's really true. I have found today that if I fix my mind on God, He'll fix my mind. How true that is. How true. I have a certain routine that I do every single day and night. I wake up in the morning and I ask God to keep me sober throughout the day. And it gave me the courage of His will for me to carry it out. Because I don't want power. I just want the courage. See, I have no courage at all. I'm fearful. So I ask Him for the courage to do what's in front of me. And then when I go to bed at night, I thank Him for keeping me sober. And then I ask Him to keep me sober during the night. Because I used to like to drink NyQuil. Oh, yeah. We'd go through NyQuil pretty regularly, and my wife would say, "Why are you drinking so much NyQuil?" "I don't feel good." She goes, "Well, you know what? Buying 10 or 11 bottles of NyQuil a week is kind of crazy." And I go, "Yeah, well, maybe we should buy a big one." You know? But they don't make them. They don't make them. And so that's what I do. Bill alluded to the fact that I always say in the end of the meetings that I'm the best person I've ever been. And I really am. Nobody in this room would have hung out with me when I was drinking. None of you. I don't care who you were or what you did. You wouldn't have hung out with me. So when I define the word best, it's this way. Better enjoy sobriety today. And I do. I do. I love sobriety. I love everything it's given me. Everything it's taken away from me, and everything it has in store for me tomorrow. Because I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But if I do the things today that I'm supposed to do, I'm going to have a good tomorrow. I call it clearing away the wreckage of the future. Too many times I sit down in the past and worry about what's going to happen tomorrow. And I found out that if I'm doing what I'm supposed to do today, like it says on page 77 in our big book, to be fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about me, my life is good. And I try to do that. Yeah, there's some ups and downs, there's some hills, but I get through it because I don't drink. And I thank God, and there's a message in there. Why me? Why not you? You know, there's a message. So I take that as God has given me a little wake-up call. You know, John, maybe you should be doing this. Maybe you should be doing that. So I said, okay, fine. And then I have a wife, and she'll point it out to me. You know, she'll let me know what I'm doing right and what I'm doing wrong. Brings me to a point where a guy at one time who had a problem with understanding that there was a higher power and a God. He was a high-rise window washer. And one afternoon, he was out on these scaffolds, and he was washing the windows. And a big wind came by, and he fell off the scaffold, and he's holding on like this. And he says, "Oh, dear God, help me, help me." And the clouds open up, and the voice comes down and says, "Let go." And he says, "Is there anybody else up there I can talk to?" I like that message. It's really kind of cool when I think about it. You know. Yeah, I've done that. Yeah, I did that when I was drinking. Get me out of this one, God, and I'll never do it again. And then I would do it again. And like I said, I stopped drinking hundreds of times. My problem was I couldn't stop from starting. You know, I'd reward myself a day or two later, have, I don't know, half a bottle of scotch and maybe a bottle of Drambuie, and everything was good again, and get in trouble, and then I'd stop again and start up again, and wow. Haven't had a drink since my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, folks. And if I can do it, anybody can do it. And our friends, you know, you guys can do it too. We just don't drink one day at a time. That's all it is, one day at a time. You know, and I did all kinds of weird things. Sometimes I would stay up all night because I wanted to drink so bad. I wouldn't go to sleep. I just stay up, go watch TV, and just sit there. Or maybe I'd read a book. At least I'd open the book, and I might not be able to read anything, but I wouldn't drink. I had to do everything I could not to drink. I would take a different route to work. I started shaving left-handed. I don't recommend that. What happened here, John? I started shaving left-handed. Jeez, you know, half my face is shaven off. And so I did all the things I was supposed to do that my sponsor told me to do to change. And it worked, despite me, you know, because God was working in my life. What an amazing journey this has been. And once again, I want to thank Rick for asking me to come here and share a little bit. Thank my sponsor for coming down here with me. We'll talk all the way going home. We'll have another meeting. We had one on the way coming down, and we'll have another one on the way going home, and he'll probably chastise me or something, which is okay. I'm always learning to grow. Life is good. Just keep coming back, everybody, and don't drink no matter what. So thank you once again for being here. I love you all. So, good luck, you guys.